Hey, I'm Abigail Johnson, and you're listening to the Tennis in the UK podcast. It's technically the off-season. For some people, it's even pre-season, but tennis never stops worldwide. And that is also true of tennis here in the UK. The Wheelchair National Championships took place in Shrewsbury last week. The LTA British Tour Masters is being staged in Loughborough next week. And Battle of the Brits Scotland versus England arrives in Aberdeen the week after that. But some players have truly earned a break, even if that is the briefest of breaks, as was the case for two players who I sincerely hope you have at least heard the names of this year. If you haven't, we're going to change that right now. Henry Patton and Julian Cash are both 26, both former successful college tennis players, and are both now ranked inside the world's top 70 after becoming the first team ever to hit double digits of ATP Challenger Tour titles won in a single season. They achieved this feat last week on clay courts with victory over the tournament's top seeds in Portugal. And what makes their accomplishment even more phenomenal, even more than the fact that they've won titles on all three surfaces and won a challenger at the first attempt, is that these 10 trophies have been won within the space of 6 months, with the duo never having even contested an ATP Challenger level event prior to the end of May. For those who are a little more out of the loop, the ATP Challenger Tour is the second tier of competition up on the men's pro circuit, and the first Challenger trophy that Patton and Cash won was at the highest level of ATP Challenger Tour competition. Now, last month, we heard from Alicia Barnett and Olivia Nichols after they played their part at the Billie Jean King Cup Finals and GB made the semis. They've been the best all-British women's doubles team of this season, and it's fair to say that Patton and Cash have easily bagged that status on the men's side with a past 8 months that has been nothing short of mind-blowing. They began the season with Cash at world number 564 and Patton world number 771 in the doubles rankings, and their first title as a team came just 8 months ago in April at a 25K level ITF event. They claimed three of those trophies in a row in Nottingham, ahead of taking several steps up to win grass court trophies in Surbiton and Ilkley before their Wimbledon main draw debut, which is all to say, events here in GB acted as the springboard for where these two find themselves now, on the brink of main draw qualification for the Australian Open, the first Grand Slam of the 2023 season. So without question, we had to get the guys on the podcast this week to hear all about their 2022 experiences and to allow everyone to get to know more about them and their respective journeys to date. In order to give them both the spotlight they deserve, I spoke to them individually. So first of all, you're going to hear from Henry Patton, the left-handed half of the team. Among other things, Henry talks about the decision to focus doubles only and whether or not that was a difficult choice, what it was like to go from working at the championships to actually being a competitor there, and which of the team's many accomplishments stands out to him at the end of the year. Here is Henry Patton. Delighted to be joined by Henry Patton, one half of the ATP Challenger Doubles Dream Team, who have hit the heights this season, 10 titles at that level in total, which is incredible. Henry, first of all, congrats. Second of all, I know this is the first week that you've really had to kind of sit back and take it in. So how has that been for you? And had you really been able to comprehend what you guys have been doing prior to now, when the dust has settled, as it were?
Well, thank you. The answer to that is not really. We've just come back from obviously a really long trip, about 4 months on the road. So yeah, towards the end of the trip where people started talking about us breaking records and obviously reaching top 70 in the world for both of us, that kind of came at a time in the trip where we were both pretty out of it. So yeah, definitely nice to take a moment at home, see the family, and yeah, reflect on what's been an amazing half a year.
Yeah, seriously, good stuff. I was saying to you before, I don't think anyone can kind of truly comprehend what you've done and where you've gone from. I'll have said this already on the recording, but 14 trophies as a team, three different levels. So you had the ITF events and two levels of challenges, three different surfaces. And you mentioned there kind of people started talking, your rankings went up, the situation changed. How aware were you of that noise during the run? And was there a point where you felt like expectations really started picking up in terms of things happening externally?
That's a good question. I mean, what I'd say, and I'm sure I'll keep going back to it, is we were just kind of in the zone for the last, I would say, for the last month. We were just in the zone. We were really focused on chasing our ranking when it sort of became clear to us that maybe we have a chance to play in Australia next year if we really sort of basically continue what we're doing. I mean, we knew that was a big ask. So we were like really focused on our ranking, kind of following the live rankings, trying to do the maths and figuring out what we needed to do when. And basically, we figured out that we just needed to win out, really, or as close to that as possible. So, yeah, we were aware of bits and pieces. We were aware that we were kind of chasing the Challenger record. And obviously, when we broke the Challenger record, there was quite a lot of coverage on that. But
That
yeah,
was
our
at
main
nine,
focus.
correct, in terms of breaking the record. That was when he
Yeah.
hit nine
So,
titles. Okay.
yeah, we equaled it at eight, I think, in Drummondsville, broke it in then in Italy, and then obviously finished off the trip with a win in Portugal on the clay. But again, when we were in Italy, we just come from Canada. I think we had a flight on Sunday night, got into the UK on Monday, 4 hour layover in Gatwick, and then flew to Andrea. So at that point, we were just completely out of it. I mean, yeah, it was a mess, but yeah.
I know you and your nature as a person, as a player, you are quite laid back, but as you say, tracking things the way you were, looking at rankings, looking for the cutoff for Australia, did that not make you feel any kind of nervousness, tightness, pressure, or did you just manage to completely take that in stride?
Honestly, we played so many matches that we were taking it in our stride really well. I think we dealt with the pressure incredibly well. And that wasn't really a conscious effort for either of us. It was something that we had talked about, me and Jules. The nerves were definitely worse at the start of the trip. We went through a bit of a rough patch right at the start when we headed over to the US. We, lost second round, first round, something like that. And I know for a fact that we both felt way more nervous in those matches. A couple of them went to a third set breaker. And then it gets to a point where you're just used to playing, and the doubles format kind of puts you in those situations every match. So by the end, no, I would say we weren't feeling the pressure too much. We were just trying to play well and focusing on that.
Yeah, I can imagine the rhythm definitely helps. I'll bring it back to the present in a few minutes, but what I like to do with these is go right back to the beginning because a lot of people who will likely have been aware of you for the first time this year, they won't know your backstory. They won't know how you came to the sport in the first place. So if we go right back, early beginnings with tennis, what did that look like for you?
Early beginnings. So I'm one of four children in my family. So I think tennis really began for me as a distraction for a young child. I remember playing tennis in the attic of my grandparents, like just to keep me busy when I was super young, like four, just hitting against the wall. Started having lessons probably when I was 5 or 6 with my younger brother, just being dropped off on a Saturday morning. I think that's the way most people start, just to get the kids out of the house. Yeah, and then I guess probably started taking it more seriously, probably like under 10s, under 12s. I would say I was having like regular lessons. So yeah, that's kind of how tennis started for me. It was kind of a family ordeal with my siblings.
Okay. And was there any tennis or sporting background with your parents, with your grandparents? What actually led you to pick up a racket in the first place?
Very little. And my parents won't be cross with me for saying that because they are both rubbish at tennis. they are both. My mum was a county golfer, and my dad played, you know, played rugby, cricket, played loads of sports. So a bit of hand-eye coordination in there somewhere, but no tennis really. I think just in my area, there are a few kind of smaller clubs that are super accessible. So it's kind of the easiest sport for me to get into.
Nice. So at what point did you really decide that you wanted to go pro? And with tennis being kind of unfamiliar to your family, what was their reaction to that from you?
I probably made the decision. So obviously I then went to college and had some success over there. And probably in my last year of college, I decided that I wanted to try and play professionally at least for a bit. And yeah, my parents super supportive. Obviously kind of said, go for it. You know, we'll support you through it. Again, I'm one of four kids, so they said, we're not going to give you any money for it, but we will support you for as long as you want to do it. And yeah, I mean, throughout the process, they've both been amazing. They are both quite competitive for me in different ways. But at the same time, just I think they really appreciate that I love what I'm doing and yeah, have been really, really supportive throughout.
That's awesome. I've met a couple of your siblings across the course of this year at tournaments in the UK. I've met your mum. What has their reaction been to what you've been doing over the past few months? Is there any surprise? Is it just pleasure, support? What are kind of the feelings there, do you think?
Yeah, again, incredibly supportive on one hand. What I would say about my family is that they love bringing me back down to earth. Don't get too much credit, that's for sure. But yeah, I mean, they're all supportive. They're all kind of keeping in touch with me when I'm away for long periods of time, which is amazing for me. It can feel pretty lonely out there. But yeah, when I'm back at home, I love it because it's kind of right back to normal. Yeah, I don't get any special treatment or anything. I'm brought back down to earth quite handily. So, which is exactly how I'd like it. You know, I wouldn't want a big fuss. So yeah, it's nice to have such a great supportive family around me. I feel very lucky.
And that must be really helpful in terms of how things have taken off so quickly over the last half of this year and situation has changed so much, to have that kind of solid ground, I guess, under your feet must be really helpful. You mentioned college, so let's touch on that briefly. We've spoken to a few players that have gone the college tennis route. I found it quite interesting with you. So you went to UNC Asheville, if I've got that correct. Yeah. And with a lot of players, I mean, we see, for example, quite a few of the guys from British circles at the moment, they've gone to TCU, which is where Cam Norrie went. And you've got these college tennis venues that are kind of bigger names. They have the list of players that have come through. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong again, because college tennis is not my expertise, but I feel like you, with the success you had at college, kind of helped to put UNC Asheville on the map a little bit in terms of college tennis and the competition and the level. So what kind of led you to go to that specific college in the first place?
Yeah, well, I'd agree with most of what you just said. What led me there, I mean, as a junior, so I didn't really play that much tennis between the ages of, I would say, kind of like 12 and 16, 17. Like, I wasn't playing much at all, sort of like once a week. Like, really wasn't playing. I was playing sports. And then I ended up going to Colford School, which has a tennis academy kind of attached to it, and developed quite well there, actually under Andrew Richardson, interestingly. So he was one of the coaches there, Miles Orton, who now works at Loughborough, and a few others. So the coaching quality there, as it turned out, was very, very good. But obviously Andrew went on to coach Emma on her run to the US, and Miles now works at the National Academy in Loughborough. So found myself in pretty good hands there. And then, so the coach at UNC Asheville, guy called Tom Hand, which is funny because obviously Tom Hands is a British tennis player, but different Tom Hand. originally from the UK and actually knew Andrew. So that was kind of the initial link. And then Sarah Borwell with Tennis Smart, or Tennis Smart as it was that time, kind of set me up. And yeah, I just fell in love with the place, really. Asheville's a really cool city. Quite small college, Division One college, so the standard was still high. But yeah, a lot smaller than kind of like your Baylors, your Tennessees, your Oklahomas. But yeah, I obviously found success there and got lucky with my choice, really.
What do you see as the biggest differences in yourself as a player or even as a person from when you started at the college compared to when you graduated?
Yeah, it's hard to put my finger on one thing. If I had to summarize it, I would just say that I grew up a lot. As a player, I think I just began to understand the value of hard work. It's a bit of a cliche, but going in there in my first semester and, you know, 6 a.m. weight sessions and track sessions, that was all a bit of a foreign concept to me. And then that gradually became the norm. So I think certainly that side of it. I just got lucky. Tom was an amazing coach. He really was quite overqualified for his job at UNC Asheville, given the level of the players. And he took a lot of time to develop my game and develop me as a person, I think most importantly, and put me in a position to learn and grow and really just make the most out of my opportunities. I think that's what it came down to, is me understanding that making the most of my opportunities was really all I could do and see where it goes from there.
That's great stuff. It must be awesome for the team back there to see what you're doing now, not only what you did at college, but what you've gone on to do since then. That must be awesome for them. Let's bring it back to now then, and yourself and Julian, that you've been out of... Now, when did you graduate? Was that 2019, 2020?
Yeah, 2019, yeah.
Okay, so since then, you've won multiple titles on the pro circuit, singles and doubles. Ahead of playing with Julian, you had won titles with, I think, three other players. What felt different about the partnership with Julian? Can you kind of pinpoint a moment or a time period where it felt like that was going to be the one that you stuck with, that was going to be the one that worked?
I think with Julian, it was a little bit different because I think we were both quite open to specifically practicing doubles. And were open to, it seems ridiculous at the time, but the option to specialize in doubles eventually. We were both obviously very much playing singles and committed to singles at that time, but I think we were both on the same page with that. And Julian actually managed to set up a session with Louis Kaye in, I think, January or February, where we worked through some things. He's obviously doubles guru, doubles legend. And I think... on court, you know, it was the same. I'm good friends with Julian as I was good friends with my other partners, but it was more just, I think we'd normalized the idea of specifically practicing doubles and learning new patterns and new systems of how to play. So I think that was the main difference.
Interesting. That's really interesting because I was going to ask you, and we might as well bring this up now, at what point you truly decided to invest in doubles, and was that a hard decision? Because I mean, for Julian, he wasn't quite as high up the singles rankings as you. For yourself, this year alone, you made a couple of finals at 25k ITF level. So was that something you had to think about for a while? Because I know you haven't completely abandoned singles for now, but obviously doubles is high priority and schedule is made accordingly.
Yeah. Definitely wasn't an easy decision. I've sort of known for a long time, you know, since college, that I probably have more potential for doubles, just the way my game is set up, you know, left-handed, good serve, and like to be at the net. That being said, like you mentioned, I actually did have quite a lot of success on the singles court this year. It's something I talked to my coach, Calvin Betton, with quite a lot, who was really reluctant at first to say, yeah, just go for doubles, because of that success and because I hadn't really, you know, spent that much time on the singles tour. So we went over to the States kind of with the intention to play both, as long as we got into the singles tournaments, obviously, which as it turned out, we were getting into. The issue with that was as we started to do well, you know, the doubles final and the challenges is on Saturday and then singles qualifying starts Sunday. And obviously every week they're in a different place. So you can't do that. And then you start getting fined for late withdrawals, et cetera, et cetera. So the decision kind of made itself. I would also say that I'm now in a place where I'm pretty comfortable with that decision. I think it, especially when you're doing well, ironically, is incredibly hard to put the time and effort required to train both singles and doubles. I don't think we would have had the success. I definitely don't think we would have had the success that we've had if I'd have been trying to practice singles alongside practicing doubles. So yeah, it's kind of been a long process. The decision kind of made itself, and I'm kind of in a happy place about it. Obviously, I mean, we've had an amazing year, and I cannot complain at all. So yeah, on one side, it's kind of a shame because I do enjoy singles, and I think I probably could have gotten a little bit higher and pursued that and seen where it's gone. But yeah, obviously in a really, really good positive place now.
Yeah, the commitment has brought in the rewards for sure. Picking up on what you said there, a little point of interest. Do you think there has been, I guess, less consistent double success at ATP Challenger level because there aren't as many players committing to doubles and committing to a certain partnership? Do you think that factors massively?
Like in terms of compared to futures or...
Yeah, well, compared to, I guess you've got the main guys on the ATP tour, you've got, yeah, I guess, a lot of the same teams making ATP finals and that kind of thing. Whereas on the Challenger circuit, I mean, you guys have won 10 trophies. I mean, I know guys that compete at Challengers that just won their first doubles trophy in 2 or 3 years this year. So yeah. What do you think? Do you think that's a big factor, kind of just a lack of focus on the doubles?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you see quite a few doubles pairs that are completely focused on doubles on the Challenger Tour. You do see quite a lot of mixing and matching of partners. I think me and Jules have been really fortunate to have each other throughout the weeks. It's taken a lot of stress out of our schedule. Yeah, I mean, it's tough to put your finger on it, really. I think the main thing for us has been kind of we've been sticking together and learning as a partnership and kind of putting the hours in. Obviously you do get singles players that turn up and play, and some of them are pretty good, pretty difficult to deal with. You know, we lost to quite a few singles players actually when we were out there. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely the reason for our success is just kind of day in day out working together and working on the craft, as it were. That's been a huge USP for us, I think.
Okay, let's rewind way back to a full 6 months ago, and you won your first ATP Challenger trophy at the first attempt. With everything that you've done, all the matches that you've played, do you even recall kind of the feelings of going into that environment for the first time? What are your memories of that event?
Yeah, definitely remember it. I remember our preparation was terrible. I was out in the US, and we didn't hear about the wild card until very, very close to the event. So I ended up kind of flying back over, training for a couple of days on the grass. And then, yeah, we were in the mixer. Yeah, I remember the feelings. We were both very scared, is a polite way of putting it, and nervous and didn't know what to expect. Obviously, we ended up dealing with those nerves quite well. I think the grass really helped us. We both have good serves and both comfortable at the net, which the grass lends itself to. And yeah, absolutely remember. We played Kudla and Kozlov in the first round, who weren't that interested in beating us, I don't think. And then came through a tight one against JP Smith and...
Ram Kumar Ramanathan.
Yeah, Ramanathan. And from there, yeah, a little bit of a blur, but getting through those first couple of matches was huge for us. Obviously now, having won so many challenges, it's odd to look back at that. But at the time, it felt like we'd just won the biggest tournament ever. And yeah, it was a really special moment, and one that kind of set us on our way, I guess.
Yeah, you mentioned that being particularly special with it being the first one. With you having won so many now, has it got old for you guys at any point? I know it would sound terrible if you were to say it had, but genuinely, is there a sense of, oh, another day at the office when you reach a certain number?
Yes and no. There's definitely a sense of another day at the office. Obviously, being on such a long trip isn't ideal, but in our position, we kind of had to. There weren't that many 250s at the end of the year for us to try and get into, and we were chasing a ranking. So yes, there was definitely a sense of another day in the office is getting pretty long now. Kind of need a break. And yeah, it was actually that flight back over from Montreal. Via London to Italy, where it was pretty tough not to just pack up the bags and, you know, take the train home. But at the same time, we'll never get bored of winning, I don't think. And we understand that it's all part of the process. And we're, as I mentioned, super excited to try and get our teeth into the main tour. And this is just kind of part of that journey. So, yeah, we've loved it.
You mentioned the Australian Open and that being a big goal. Obviously, it would not be your first Grand Slam because you did make the main draw debut at Wimbledon this year, which I'm sure was a special time. I have a couple of questions on that point. Firstly, I was listening actually to another interview that you did, and you mentioned that previously you'd actually worked at Wimbledon, kind of on the IBM team. They compile the stats, correct? I remember being there this year and seeing a few of the stats team, and I've known of that as a job role previously. What was that like for you, going from doing that job courtside to actually being on the court yourself? Because we see, you know, these players that have been ball kids, for example, many, many years ago, and then they'll end up at a big event. But I think it's much rarer for you to be, for example, like a stats person or a court coverer or something, and having been there in more recent years, I don't think many of the people that fill that kind of role would expect to actually be competing at the event themselves at some point in time. So what was that like for you to make that transition?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I obviously kind of knew my way around the grounds pretty well already. The IBM stats is still going. It was basically like a summer job that I did for 2 years while I was at college. So obviously come back over the summer and work there for a couple of weeks, and it's a nice bit of cash, and it's pretty hard work actually. They work you pretty hard, kind of long days. It can go to the end of play, so yeah, long days. It's odd, and obviously not when I was playing, but as I was kind of around the grounds, I would obviously notice those IBM stats people on the corner of the court looking pretty miserable filling in all the stats. I was like, yeah, I've been there. I know how you feel. That's obviously a really nice feeling to be there playing tennis instead of plugging inputs into a computer. I actually went down into the office and said hi to some of my old bosses, which was quite funny. I'm very happy to be playing tennis there instead of working. Yeah.
That must be a strange thing. They're doing the stats for you now instead of you doing the stats for someone else. But it's a good point. I don't think people realize how intense that job is and where those stats come from. And you have to be on the ball, like point after point. But that's just intriguing to me that you could, in such kind of a tight time span, have gone from that to the court. That's awesome. But the other thing I wanted to ask regarding Wimbledon, you and Julian obviously had this great run going in. You'd won the 3 ITFs in Nottingham. You'd won 2 challenges on grass courts. So arguably, you were the most in form of the several British doubles teams going in. And you drew the number 13 seeds to veterans of the tour in the first round, which I personally felt was a bit rough. Did you feel a bit hard done to? How did you feel about that draw?
No, we didn't feel that done. Well, you know, it's a tennis tournament. It's a draw. It's random. It's, you know, you can't do anything about it. And we just wanted to go out and enjoy ourselves, which I think we did a pretty good job of all week, really. We had an amazing time. It's a little bit different playing at Wimbledon than it is at the Nottingham Futures, you know. I mean, you can't really complain. So, Yeah, it was a tough draw, and they played very well. Actually, I think it was pretty valuable for us to have a look at two guys who've been on the tour for a long time and who were playing very well. Gave us an idea of what we needed to, the level we needed to get to. And yeah, obviously it was a shame to go out in the first round. It was frustrating, but yeah, I only have fond memories of that week, really.
That's great. Lots of great takeaways from this year. And on that note of the many trophies that you've won that I keep mentioning, is there a standout one for you that's particularly special or that you felt was particularly helpful when it came to your progress as a team?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Surbiton is one, just groundbreaking for us, really. Granby out in Canada was the first one we won on hard, after kind of a long stretch of struggling. And then probably the last one on clay, just because it's on clay and we had very low expectations for that week. I think most British players tend to struggle on the clay just because we don't have any. So yeah, those are the three. If I had to pick one, I would definitely say Surbiton. Just to win on your debut, and yeah, without that week, we probably wouldn't be where we are. So that's probably my favorite one.
Nice. One on each surface there. I like it. Just underlining the fact that you've done it across the board. Brilliant. Okay. Right. So let's throw it forward right at the end here then. So you said Australian Open was a big target. You're both top 70 now. But in terms of kind of further into the future, how far ahead are you guys looking right now? And do you even see a ceiling as far as this partnership goes?
Yeah, I mean, firstly, hopefully we get into Australia, and I think that's a good way of describing what our schedule is going to look like for the next few months. At our ranking, you don't quite know what you're going to get into. You're kind of in between challenges and the main tour. So we will just look to play on the main tour wherever we can. We will enter everything and see where that takes us. In terms of a ceiling, no. And again, it's something that me and Julian have discussed. I think really good relationship that me and Jules have, very honest with each other. And, you know, we've said, you know, if it's not working, then it's not working. But at the moment, it is working. So I think we'll play it by ear. Obviously, it's going to be a big year for us in terms of trying to transition. So yeah, we will play it by ear. Hopefully, we continue to have success and continue to get to play together because it's obviously really enjoyable for both of us. Feel very lucky to have him as a partner, both on and off the court. And yeah, seeing how our relationship's developed, we obviously are really keen to continue to play together. But yeah, we'll see.
Definitely keeping your feet on the ground, Henry. And that's a good quality to have with everything that's happening for you and hopefully continues to happen. So great to see it. Thanks so much for taking the time. And we'll send the prayers up now that you get into Australia because we need to see that happen. So
Yeah,
yeah,
agree.
congrats
Thank
on
you.
everything and all the best for next season.
Thanks, Abigail.
So that's Henry. And now to hear from Julian Cash, as well as deep diving into this season's results, Julian talks about dealing with physical setbacks, whether or not he's felt underestimated in recent years and months, and what the future looks like for the doubles team of the moment. Here's Julian.
So we've spoken to Henry. It's time to turn to the right-handed half of the doubles team, Julian Cash. Thanks for taking the time for this. And first and foremost, congratulations on everything that you've achieved over the past few months. Ridiculous stuff. You've had a week now to kind of digest it. What has that week looked like for you? And has everything you've done in 2022 sunk in yet?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. Pleasure to do this. Looking forward to it. Yeah, we've had been back for a week, so it's been nice to kind of be on home soil for a little bit, let everything set in and kind of realize a little bit of what we've done. It was so fast-paced what we were doing that we didn't get much of an opportunity to reflect. So yeah, it's been fun from that perspective. I've actually been up in Loughborough and came home for half a day to my parents and then went up to Loughborough. I'm still kind of affiliated with them through the TAS program. obviously done a lot less work for them in the last 4 months than was anticipated. But they've been very good in accommodating kind of my trip as it evolved. None of us really foresaw like how that was going to go. So they were supporting me through that. So I've been up there this week, helping them out a little bit. Just relaxing up there. I know a lot of people in the area, so it's been fun to have some time off court.
And there were different courts that you finished on, the clay courts. A little bit surprising for you guys, or did you feel like you'd built up to that?
I mean, I will say we got lucky. It was indoor clay. They weren't too slippy, and it was generally lower bouncing, a little faster than some clay I've played on. But in the same breath, yeah, we were shocked. We knew we had a lot of work to do that week. We knew if we were to get anywhere close to an Aussie Open cut, it was final or nothing. So, pressure was on, and credit to Henners and Barry was out there that week. Calvin had been out the week before. We put a lot of extra effort in that week to kind of adjust to the moving surface and see if we could, make something happen.
Yeah, really lucky stuff, that 14th title of the season. It's not like you earned that one at all. So we've got this season. We're going to deep dive into it. But first and foremost, and you might know I like to do this on these, let's go way back to the beginning of your journey, because we want to learn a little bit more about you and the road that's taken you to where you are now. So what are your earliest memories of tennis? And when do you feel that you started to really take it seriously and look at the option of becoming a pro?
I first started because I was a kid with way too much energy. I played every sport I possibly could, loved all sports. Wasn't necessarily amazing at any specific sport, but just was decent at everything and loved being part of it all. And tennis was just another thing to kind of chuck me in at the weekend, I guess. There was a club down the road from where I lived. Used to go there at the weekends and play just for fun at the weekends, and somehow was quite good through luck, I suppose. And the coach there kind of pushed my parents a little bit into, you should try and give him some individual lessons. He actually could be good. So that was kind of a 2-year process, I think. And then I was probably about 8 or 9 before that started to happen. And it kind of, it went from there, really. That same coach, I stayed with him for quite a while, a good 5-6 years. And I was fortunate that his sister had played on the tour. So he kind of knew the journey that I was potentially going on and got me to compete internationally at a very young age. I played 2 events at under 12s. Obviously no ranking points or anything like that, but it got me to experience, getting on a flight, playing foreigners that you have absolutely no idea who they are, how they play. There was different game styles, different mentalities, different levels of cheating, all sorts going on. And it was great to be exposed to that at a young age. And I also had some success at one of those events, which kind of, I still think now was that first kind of fire that, made me think, okay, I'm not just doing well in my county or whatever it is. I was I've beaten some foreign players. If they're here, they also must be pretty good. It kind of started like that. And I feel like I've taken quite a normal pathway, just in that I have taken every step. I never really got the chance to skip anything. I never got tons of wild cards to, suddenly go play challenges and miss futures or whatever. I've played at all the levels, which I think helps me a lot now. I've experienced a lot of tennis, met a lot of people and had a lot of people helping me along the way. So yeah, it's been a fun journey, and can't say I really regret many of the decisions, to be honest.
Yeah, you mentioned you didn't have a lot of legs up, but you did have a pretty successful junior career, as you touched on then, and some good achievements nationally and internationally. What was your kind of family, parents' reaction to that? And what was their reaction to someone actually coming and telling them, look, your kid could actually be a really good tennis player?
I mean, initially, they weren't that keen, I think, on me playing tennis. like it wasn't tennis itself, but it was just kind of like, you know, maybe this coach is just trying to get a few extra pennies type thing. I think there wasn't a huge interest in tennis specifically. But I mean, they've been really supportive from day one. They could obviously tell pretty quickly that I love tennis and that I was doing better in tennis than anything else. But at the same time, they've never really forced me to stay in the sport. And one thing that's like run through pretty much my whole career is they have wanted me to stay in education, which I was never an amazing student. I never did badly in school either, but I didn't enjoy it. So I put minimal effort in through pretty much my whole education until I got to college. I kind of appreciated where I was and that I had stayed in education. And that's the first time I really enjoyed studying and started to put effort into what I was doing, and results also followed that, surprisingly. But yeah, I mean, they've been really important in my journey. You know, a lot of sacrifice from then. Any tennis parents will know, especially in the younger years when the kids can't drive and all that stuff, there's a lot goes into it. Obviously, a lot of money, time, effort, emotion, family arguments, splitting the family in terms of like, can't make family lunch and then mum has to come with me as well. And you know, there's a lot goes into it. Obviously, it's a lot for the kid as well. But I think the kid generally is, sorry, that's my mental dog. if the kids playing tennis, they obviously love it. And it's, I think, generally quite easy to make those sacrifices. But sometimes for the parents, it's not so easy, I don't think. So yeah.
Yeah, it takes a lot. That's really interesting what you said about the academic side of things, and your parents were really keen for you to keep that up, because I know, much like Henry, you did go the college tennis route to Oklahoma State University. So was your parents' desire for you to keep up the studies, was that a big factor in that move, or a factor?
I mean, it was definitely a factor in the sense of I had stayed in education to that point and not gone to an academy, which I think I never really asked to go full time at like 16 or whatever after GCSEs, but a lot of players were doing that in my age group. And I definitely considered and thought that maybe that's what I should be doing. And I'm glad I didn't. But going to university was my decision. When I turned 18, it was very much like, if you want to go pro, then, and actually I think probably at that time, going professional might have been what my parents would have thought was best for me. But again, they supported my decision and yeah, I don't regret it at all. I mean, I went through a lot of injuries, which if they would have happened when I was on tour, I think potentially a different outcome to that. Obviously, they paid for some of the rehab and the surgery and stuff like that, which is a huge factor as well. I had a great support team around me, like, you know, living with friends, going through some of that stuff was really important to my mental health at that time. And I think if I had been, you know, just at home, not saying that family wouldn't have been enough, but I was hugely distracted there, and still felt part of a team, going to the matches, supporting and stuff. So that was really good for me. And I also think if I would have played professionally at 18, like, I don't think emotionally I was really ready for it. I mean, I was playing good tennis, and potentially tennis-wise might have been ready, who knows. But college gave me a chance to, you know, be myself. I had a lot of fun in college, which I either wouldn't have had if I went professional straight away, or would have, and it, again, wouldn't have been the best decision for my tennis, a lot of it. So, you know, I enjoyed my time in college, both on and off the court. And yeah, I think it's a great option for everyone. I think it's one of those that I would personally say that everyone should go, unless there's a reason not to. And for me, a reason not to being that you're going to be maybe top 200 in like 18 months type thing. If that's not on the cards, I would say you should go. And if tennis is going great, then you can leave after a year. But I think, well, speaking to people a little older than me, when college was seen a bit more like giving up, maybe, A lot of them regret not going. So I think it's an opportunity that should be taken by most people.
Okay, strong argument. And we see so many more players going that route, particularly on the men's side. And in terms of people that I've spoken to on this podcast, never heard a bad word about it. So that's continuing the theme. Something that you mentioned there, Julian, is the injuries. I know you had a lot of struggles with that. I was trying to work out the time period. So it sounds like it's slotted in around the college time. But you had a surgery, I believe, leading into lockdown. 2020, you had one. So in terms of that, how old do you feel? And I threw this one at Heather Watson, actually, the other month. How old do you feel in tennis years? Because you're 26, but the international circuit hasn't seen a whole lot of you, considering that you are 26 years old.
Yeah, I mean, I feel young, which I am only 26. I know a lot of people will laugh at that, but it's the best my body's felt probably ever. So, and that includes through my junior years, in terms of like my fitness and like the injuries, touch wood, like this is the best I felt by an absolute mile. So, from that side, I feel like I've not been on tour at all. And like mentally, I mean, maybe a bad time to ask after a 4 month slug, but,
sure.
It's realistically, it was my first year on tour. I mean, we've been asked a few times this season, like where have you guys come from? And my answer is always, well, I played six tournaments the year before. Like, there's only so high I could get doing that, even if they were 250s, So Henry's in the same boat. Obviously, we both graduated at kind of a weird time going into COVID, and that kind of sucked another year and a half out of, like, there was college and then that, so it was, that whole process took a long time. So yeah, I mean, realistically, I've only been playing full-time on the tour for 12 max 18 months.
Yeah, for sure. So with that being the case, with your transition, have you ever felt, obviously you had the good junior results that would have put you on the radar a bit, some setbacks since then, so did you ever feel underestimated or even forgotten about, I guess, because of the things that you were dealing with?
I mean, yes and no. Like, I obviously saw a lot of guys that I was competing against and had beaten some of them in juniors go on to have pretty scary careers quite quickly. A lot of, like, household names now.
Throw them out there. Come on, give us some names.
players like Zverev, TFO, Berrettini, Medvedev, like countless, everyone in and around my generation, really, that's or my year group, 96, 95, 97, that kind of age. There's a bunch of them now, top 50, top 100. And they all did that very quickly. So I was obviously in college at that time, which was kind of a weird, weird thing to see. Like, it definitely made me think maybe I should have. But I'm also well aware that, two 17-year-olds playing each other or even 16-year-olds is very different than those guys at 21, 22 and so on. And I was pretty realistic with that. But there was always questions from, other people that maybe didn't understand so much of, like, questioning why I was in college or, why have they done so much better? So there was definitely an element of that. But at the same time, I kind of knew what I was doing and I was happy with my decision. I mean, it's just one of those things. I think everyone's on their own path and it's always easy to compare to the ones that have done well. There's plenty that went pro at 18 and have now quit. So it's, people don't necessarily talk about that, but I mean, in terms of being forgotten about, no, I don't really think so. I was never, I was always supported to some level by the LTA when I was growing up, but I was never on the top of their list. And there was like two or three guys that were, they all quit at 18. So from that perspective, they stopped and I continued and there was never any like, oh, they're being funded or they're being looked after. Kind of in many ways, like my age group almost fell apart from a British perspective. If you take it from the fact that no one went pro, everyone went to college. So
Sounds like you did just get your head down and get on with it, which it has paid off in the long run. We should note that despite the disruption there was with the injuries, you still had a fair number of doubles titles to your name, even coming into 2022. I think you've got 24 titles overall now, a whopping 17 of those have come this season. But it's interesting that Henry Patton is your first really consistent doubles partner as far as the pro circuit goes. I think you'd won titles. I noted it down, I think, with eight other partners prior to. So I'm going to throw you a question that I actually threw to Henry. What is it about the partnership with Henry that's different to any of those that you've had before? And at what point did you get the feeling that this one would be different?
I mean, well, like you said, like I've never played with someone consistently. So I've played with plenty of good players. You know, all those guys I won titles with are great doubles players in their own right. And that's, you know, that's why we had success. But there's a lot to be said for playing with the same guy. I mean, me and Henry, when we first, you know, agreed to play with each other, like it wasn't necessarily a long-term thing. It was those 4 weeks coming up in Nottingham. Obviously knowing that through like past experience, the more you play with someone, generally the better you play as a pair. So we thought, you know, it's 4 weeks, let's have a crack. So it wasn't really any more than that. And I think why we're playing so well now is, well, there's a bunch of reasons. Obviously we play together. We have a great understanding of each other on the court now. I think our games really complement each other. Our strengths and weaknesses kind of match pretty well, I think, and actually creates an all-round very strong team. Obviously the lefty-righty combo is always a good thing in doubles, adds a lot of variety and just a completely different perspective for the opponent, so that's a huge. And then off the court we get on really well. You know, like the trip that we've just been on wouldn't have been easy to do it with just anyone. Like, we obviously, it was a grind at times, and there was a lot of it was good moments, but there were some tough moments, especially at the start of the trip, and us being like good friends off the court made that whole journey a lot easier, and I think helped us get to the level that we have on the court. So yeah, there's a bunch of reasons, and I think we have a lot of respect for each other. We both, like you said, have done well separately. So, you know, I don't think either of us like really has a big enough ego to think that like, oh, it's me or it's him. Like we both know we're good and we respect each other for that. And I think it works well.
That's great. You mentioned that swing in Nottingham, which is where this all kind of started. And I remember it like it was yesterday, the triple crown, the three straight victories, and everyone, I was bigging that up no end. And we couldn't have imagined what you'd go on to after that. But about halfway through that was the period leading up to Wimbledon, and people were starting to talk about who would play with who and who'd be doing what. And if my memory serves me correctly, I think you'd won maybe one of the titles at that point. And of course, the LTA have a hand in who plays with who at Wimbledon. And I remember there was a little bit of a discussion as to should Henry play with Julian or maybe Henry should be playing with someone else, which, I mean, I know at the time you weren't too happy about, as no one would if they were having your kinds of results at that point in time. But how did that impact you, or did it impact you at all? Was it motivational? Did it fuel you? Because you went on to do so many great things after that period of time.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I think, pretty much everyone in British tennis and that was in and around those events knew that was going on in the background. I think we, as a pair, took it quite well. I think Henry, like, you know, deep, like, well, he voiced it, that he wasn't overly happy with it, but at the same time, it was a huge opportunity for him, and we both agreed that it was an absolute no-brainer for him to go ahead with. And I was also fortunate that when that was spoken about and my coach was around and I sat down with him and we had a chat about it, and it was very much that it's just a moment in time, and we were playing great doubles together. You know, we'd got, I think, even like the improvement from week one to week two was huge for us as a pair. which was exciting. Like, I hadn't improved with someone that quickly. And so, like, Barry helped put a lot of perspective in that, and going, if that's 1 week, what could two, what could three, you know, how could that look in the future? And so kind of brushed it aside. Obviously was disappointed, upset. Like, it was in some ways part of why me and Henry first paired up. I mean, we had spoken about it for a long time, but both focused on singles careers, never really ended up in the same place. And then with those British tournaments, like four in a row, basically said, like, let's do it. Like, we're both there, let's go for it. And obviously with the grass in the back of our mind, knowing that if we showcase ourselves there well enough, that we'd get a chance. So yeah, it was tough, but definitely fueled me. It was very much me at that point, like, head down. There was no firm decision made. It was just very much of, like, this is what we're leaning towards type thing. And so for me, it was like, there's only one way to go against it, and that's to go and win some titles. And we managed to do that. So yeah, we ended up having the chat just before the end of week four that basically it was going to go the other way, really. So yeah.
Good job it did. And I remember very vividly talking to you, I think, during that week two in Nottingham and saying, well, you know what the answer is. You just got to win everything. I don't think I envisioned 10 ATP Challenger trophies, but there you go. You guys had other ideas, which is awesome. Let's talk about what came next then, which was that grass court season. You won on debut in Surbiton, first ATP Challenger you played, and that was several steps up on the Challenger circuit as well, so big stuff. Also during grass court season, you made your Grand Slam main draw debut. I wonder which of those two situations, Challenger debut, Grand Slam main draw debut, was the most nerve-wracking, or maybe felt like the biggest occasion?
I mean, for sure, Wimby, biggest occasion, no doubt about that. A lot of, like, friends, family, and whatever were there. We had a really good crowd on the day as well. Nothing quite feels like walking on the courts there. It's just different. It's hard to describe, really. But at the same time, I mean, Surbiton was pretty surreal. We didn't know we were going to get in the first place. I actually showed up for singles. So that was kind of why I was there. And then we got the call that things were going to work out and that we were going to get a wild card, which was great. I mean, we knew we'd been told we were in and around the conversations, but nothing was confirmed. So that was pretty last minute. Henry was actually in the States at the time, so jumped on the first flight back. And fortunately, due to a little bit of rain, we got a Thursday start, which I think helped his legs quite a lot. But yeah, I mean, that was pretty surreal. I think they're two very different moments in our career. That was kind of the start of what was to come, and Wimbledon was obviously, you know, kind of a dream come true as well. So,
okay, good answer. If I go back to the first bit that I didn't ask that question well, let's go with the feeling of nerves. Now, you guys do not seem to get nervous. You've played that much tennis at this point, but this was earlier on in the journey. So I'm just wondering if when you went out for that Grand Slam main draw, you kind of mixed with that level of player a little bit more than you would have done when you went out for the Challenger event. Is that right or wrong?
I think we had less time to think around Surbiton, is what I would say. Okay. Like, that just kind of, like I said, it was last minute wild card, and before we knew it, we were kind of on court. We had a tough first round and didn't look beyond that. I think we played Kozlov and Kudla, which is not ideal first round. So yeah, we just that week was pretty easy to take day by day, because we didn't really know what level we could produce and if it was good enough to compare against those guys. So I think definitely more nerves at Wimbledon. Even going into the final in Surbiton, it was very much like, let's have a crack. Like, we're here, why not? Zero expectation. So
okay. It was during, I think, the event in Nottingham, so week after Surbiton, that I got a text from a coach that I knew in the States asking me if I thought you and Henry were a top 50 doubles team at that point in time in terms of your level. So that was when you had one Challenger trophy. And obviously we're here now and you're in double digits. that made me wonder, at what point did you feel things kind of shift around you in terms of the way you were regarded, maybe by other players, by other coaches, in terms of people talking about you and your potential? Or did you have any awareness of that at all?
I think it honestly took a while. There was definitely some talk after the grass season. We went final Nottingham and then won Ilkley. So we had a great 3 weeks. I mean, people were talking for sure, but at the end of the day, like, we were only about 150. So in the big picture, like, it wasn't anything spectacular, although it was 3 good weeks. You know, we hadn't cracked top 100 or really qualified for any major event. So there was talk, and I know that a lot of it was also kind of negative, like, two guys are big serves. Of course, they did well on grass, that type of thing. Which, like, me and Henry had spoken about it a few times. Like, we kind of laughed, like, you know, yeah, big serve does help, but I'm not going to not use it, type thing. And yeah, I mean, like, people spoke about it, but I think it was brushed away quite quickly for that reason. It was all on the same surface. It was 3 back-to-back weeks, and evidently our games suit the surface. Once we got out to the States, it took us a while to get going. It did take us time to adapt to the slower courts. And then I think we won Granby, which was like our third, probably our fourth week out there, which for us felt good. It gave us a kind of a little bit of reassurance that we can do it on another surface. We really started to find a different level that week compared to the weeks prior. And from there, it took off. I think midway through the trip out there, we really started to feel our own presence around tournaments, even just through, like, jokes from other players, like some guys telling us that we're on a salary from the ATP, and guys saying that they're looking at, like, the preliminary list just to avoid us and stuff like that, which obviously were jokes and said, like, tongue in cheek. But I think part of it, you know, to some degree was true, and it did show that the impact that we were having on other players and other teams, and that confidence was obviously building for us, but it was also, impacting our opponents as well. So, yeah, I think those last kind of 6-8 weeks out there is when I felt like things started to turn in terms of people talking about us and really taking us seriously as a pair.
Yeah, one respect for sure. And this big serves thing, I will never understand it. I don't understand who decided the serve was any less a part of the sport as the forehand and backhand. It's crazy to me. I was going to ask you about that periods just after Wimbledon, and you've kind of covered it there, I think. But actually, straight after Wimbledon, you went back to ITFs, you won a 25, and then you went out and were trying to get things going on the Challenger Tour again. You picked up a few losses. Do you think that then was more about a change of conditions as opposed to a change in the level you were competing at?
Yeah, I mean, I'll know that we barely got through that 25. We didn't necessarily put our best level out. It was a very weird transition, obviously, from Wimby, like 10 days before, or whatever it was. With it being at the NTC as well, it was obviously very familiar ground for us. So, it was a weird transition. At that point, like, singles was still very much on the table, hence why we were playing the event. And I think we quickly decided that actually, like, we would get into a lot of challenges in singles, but it would be kind of stupid to not play at the highest level we can. And if our doubles is taking us that way, then, you know, let's go do that for the doubles and we'll get into qualies so we can still play singles. And if the level's there in the singles, then that'll take care of itself. But in terms of, like, the level difference, I mean, for me, it was more the surface. I mean, we also had some pretty tough draws. I mean, one of the matches we lost from, like, 3 match points up, which is, you know, it happens in doubles a lot. That was in a third set breaker. Another one we played, like, Rinderknecht and Guinard first round, who are unbelievable at doubles. Like, I mean, they don't play doubles every week, but they're a top 50 pair. You know, so that was that match, I would say, yes, level jump up. The others, I think, more like conditions adapting to that, understanding how to play on a slower surface. Again, getting comfortable as a pair. You know, we had, like, spent a couple of weeks apart. Like, we had not played the weeks between Wimby and the and Roehampton, and then we had taken a week off in Nottingham. So I think for us to get to grips with each other again and start building, you know, from the basics was important. But I don't think the level necessarily suddenly jumped up.
Sure. And I feel that watching, I feel like the gap between those different levels is much smaller than some people would appreciate from the sidelines. So a lot of matches under your belt, a lot of weeks on the road, and therefore a mixture of results in terms of some more straightforward wins, other matches like your most recent final that you've come through in the match tiebreak. Which of those wins were the ones that you took the most away from, which were, for example, the most confidence boosting? Like, what was more impactful for you, either a straightforward win or one that you had to fight a bit harder for?
I mean, that week in Granby obviously was huge for us. Like, our level got better day in, day out, and to get the title, to give ourselves that reassurance was huge for confidence. I think we took a lot from both. I mean, we went through a period of a lot of tie breaks, both like in set tie breaks and third sets, and we were coming through a lot of them. And that does give you a huge amount of confidence for one reason or another. Like, even if you're playing terrible, like, I guess with our big serves, we could find our way to a breaker. And then kind of make something happen. It's what I would put most of our success down to on the trip, is that when the crunch moments came, if it was juice points, if it was the breakers, even break points against us, like, that is when we played our best tennis by a mile. We played some pretty terrible sets at times and then would find a way to create a spark, and usually we would finish matches pretty strong. So I think of our match, the final in Andrea, the other guys actually played unbelievably well. They served to a scary level, never really got a chance. They won the first set. And then we managed to spark something, and by the end of the breaker, we were playing a completely different level to them. So we always managed to, in matches, like, find a way through, win while not playing well, and take confidence from that, not dwell on the negatives of it. And yeah, usually find a way to a decent level by the end of each match.
Good stuff. So great success as a team this season. And the two of you actually have spoken about just the rhythm of playing together and keeping that momentum going and the improvements you've seen as a result. But obviously, it's not just the team of you on court. It's also the team that's working alongside you. And I know there are a number of coaches we've been involved with. There's Calvin Betton on Henry's side. And then for you, Barry Fulcher, Tom Kizio from back in Loughborough. How does that work when you come together as a partnership? Are those guys talking to each other? How's it working when they're not on the road with you? What's that been like over the past few months?
I mean, it's not been easy. Like, obviously, well, from both sides, I mean, we obviously would have loved a bit more contact time, but just not really feasible. Being out in the States, firstly, just too expensive to get them there and take them week to week. And then the fact we never came home, we never really got those weeks between with them. So from our side, that was tough. You know, we definitely missed that. And I know from their side, it wasn't easy either. You know, not watching the practices, trying to give feedback, watching an awful lot of matches online, which I know is not necessarily the most fun thing to do. And like, they were stating our matches, every single one. So me and Henry had our individual stats. So a huge effort from them from start to finish, obviously with the time difference as well. So yeah, it wasn't easy from either side, but at the same time, the effort that they put in was noticed and was huge to not only our success, but also kind of keeping us sane on the road, keeping us ticking along in the right direction. They helped us make a lot of decisions in terms of scheduling, you know, when to have some weeks off and if we should come home, stay in the States, and so on. And none of those reasons made for selfish reasons either. I think it would have been easy for them to say, come home, but realized at certain times that although it's not ideal in for many things, actually, maybe it is best that we stay out there for and see out the rest of that tour. But yeah, they were huge to us, and it's definitely a different dynamic. Obviously, something that we've never really had to deal with before in terms of us having different coaches. But I think there's a big difference in, like, my individual tennis, Henry's individual tennis, and then our tennis as a team. I mean, they're both great guys. We both get on with them as individuals in terms of me with Calv and Henry with Barry. So it's quite an easy dynamic in that respect. But it's also, I think Calv and Barry are very respectful that if Barry's with Henry, he knows where the line is. Like, it's not his player. At the same time, does give feedback and so on. And Calv's the same with me. And I think me and Henry are both pretty open to receiving that feedback from the other coach, which is important. But they're, you know, a lot of the coaching is not just our own technical things or whatever. There's a lot of tactical stuff and a lot of it is built around the team. So I would say that probably, well, at least half, if not more, of the coaching is around that, as opposed to maybe in singles where it gets a lot more specific in terms of the technical and it's very direct to that individual.
It's great that those guys have been able to be there from the beginning as well. As I mean, like, such a long 8 months, but really with you every step of the way, even if from a distance. Has there been any talk then of how that's going to work going forwards, or is that something that's going to come up over the next kind of couple of weeks?
Yeah, it's not something we've really touched on. I don't think any of us are really like unhappy with how it is. Obviously, we would like to have them come away with us more, which hopefully financially becomes more feasible. And obviously, if we don't just disappear to the States for 4 months, will also help. You know, like, they did come out for the last 2 weeks. Calvin was in Italy with us and Barry came out to Portugal, which was really important. We were pretty drained. And so to have some fresh faces, they obviously, you know, changed the practices up, like, really important support from them. I think specifically to one match in Italy in the final, the crowd had no interest in us whatsoever. And I mean, pure silence. But then clapping our double faults and actually having Calvin there was massive in that day. Like, we were tired. It was a match we needed to win. And Calvin being there, giving us some support close to the sideline was really important, which shows the value of having them there. But no, I mean, we haven't really talked in depth of how it will look, but I think it will fall into place quite naturally. I think it's a big part of our success is we've worked really well as a team. And so I'm sure that will continue.
Absolutely. Let's throw it forwards then one last time as we close. And I know that the schedule for the near future is slightly up in the air. We're sending all the prayers up for Australia. I mean, with your rankings right now, you would really hope that kind of comes through for you. But in terms of long distance, what are your hopes for you two as a team? And I think the words I used to Henry were, do you even put a ceiling on what you can achieve at this point?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, like, the next, well, it's hard to know what any period is going to look like because we are at the edge of a lot of cuts where we are now, so, which is positive. We will get lots of chances, there's no doubt, but it's for us to take those chances and do something with them as well. I think for next year, our first goal, again, I can't really put a timeline on it for that reason, but our first goal will, I think, be top 50 just because, not just because it's a pretty number, but I think that will more or less cement us on the main tour. We'd be in, I think, pretty much every 250 at that point, which is where we want to be, to give ourselves the best chance to press on. So no real time frame on that, but I believe we can do it. I've got no doubt about that. And yeah, I mean, in terms of the ceiling, I think it's hard to put a ceiling on it. Being from Great Britain and seeing all the success, it's, you know, we know a lot of guys that are doing pretty special things in doubles. So you only have to take Lloyd. He started the year at 80 and finished at 12. So not saying that that's what I'm expecting by any means, but it does show that crazy things are possible. So hopefully we can follow in something vaguely close to his vein. But yeah, we'll take it week by week and see where we get to.
Huge wave in British tennis right now, and you guys have very much been a part of that over the course of this season. So congrats once again, and thank you for being so generous with your time, you and Henry both, in this week that is like your one holiday week, to take the time to talk. Really appreciate it. And yeah, good to get that insight into your journey so far, which is very much ongoing. So thanks, Julian, and all the best for the start of 2023.
Thanks for having me, appreciate it.
A huge thank you once again to Henry and Julian for doing this during the lone week where things were a little more low-key for them ahead of pre-season. I really appreciated it, and I hope you did too, and that you enjoyed getting the backstory on the duo who have made tennis history in 2022. If you did, by all means, share the episode on the online platform of your choice, and remember to follow the podcast on Instagram at tennis_in_the_UK and on Twitter at tennis_in_the_UK. I will look to get back to the regular upload schedule next week, but if I'm late with the next episode, those two places, Instagram and Twitter, are the places you're going to find out about it. So get following them. Thanks for listening, and see you soon.